Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Tired of saying one thing and doing the exact opposite.
That has nothing to do with me, really.
There's nothing quite as stunning as seeing your face on the cover of Time magazine.
How did that happen?
Duh.
I'm by winning. I win here and I win there. Now what?
Because of that, I'm going to start naming names.
I'm entertained as hell.
Get off my phone! Get off my phone, you little pinhead!
You borrow my brain for 5 seconds and just be like, dude, can't handle it. Unplug this bastard.
I don't care!
Shut up. Stop. Move forward.
Get off!
No, man, we're shaking the tree. I am grandiose because I live a grandiose life.
There's healing here, there's laughter, there's children, there's beautiful women and perfect food, and we just win.
I'm going to lose my mind today.
We're going to talk about Charlie Sheen for a minute and others such as Glenn Beck, who he's been compared with. Of course, no one has seen a meltdown like this in public, I don't think, ever. We've seen bits of it with Glenn Beck. People have predicted that he would go by the way of Charlie Sheen. Fortunately, it has not happened yet. I was watching a movie last night with Dustin Hoffman, a tepid version of Lenny Bruce's life called Lenny from the 70s. And Dustin Hoffman, being a good actor in some cases, couldn't pull off the Lenny Bruce shtick because he just doesn't have the horsepower. I don't know what it is, but it was not good. I remember when it came out, I didn't like it, but something struck me about the Lenny Bruce story as compared to the Charlie Sheen story. Lenny Bruce was once a very talented comedian, as you well know. And what happened toward the end was he started heavily using heroin, and he got obsessed with his court case. And he went on to the club scenes, and all he would talk about were his legal problems, day and night, night and day. He'd read from the transcripts, and people stopped going to the clubs. They walked out. Eventually, he was found dead on a bathroom floor. Now, I'm not comparing him to anybody current with regard to that, but, you know, I call this the Icarus syndrome. The Icarus syndrome, as you may remember, the mythology of Icarus was a young Greek man who thought he was a god, and he thought he could fly like a bird, and he attached feathers to wooden boards with wax, and he took off from a cliff, as many of our, you know, cliff divers do, I suppose, with modern apparatus, and as he jumped off the cliff, he started to flap towards the sun. And the closer he got to the sun, as the myth goes, the hotter, of course, the climate was. And which is not true, incidentally. And the closer he got to the sun, the hotter it got. And the wax melted, the feathers fell off his fake wings, and he fell to earth. And that was the story of Icarus. Icarus could really, we're all Icarus, okay? All of us are Icarus at a certain point, in the sense that we're all invented. We all invent ourselves from the time we're children. What do you want to be, Johnny? I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a ball player. I want to be this. I want to be that. And then we become what we can be, or whatever life presents itself. And eventually we have to start creating ourselves, whether it be with our families or our own self-image. But in essence, we're all Icarus. And it's only a matter of time until our feathers come off. And usually you go to an old age home, and it's sad to see once phenomenal human beings sitting there in corners babbling by themselves, or pushed into a next to a curtain with an attendant beating them about the head and neck, stealing their change. It's a terrible thing, but the fact is we're all Icarus. We all come apart at a certain point if we live long enough. And to watch it happen in a young man is quite another story. And I want to talk about that for a moment. And I want to ask you something. Do you think Obama suffers from the same Icarus complex as does Charlie Sheen on a different scale? Now, remember, Charlie Sheen is not controlled by anybody. He is so out of control because he has no handlers. This is the real man. This is probably the man who was always there behind the scenes. This is the man that those who worked with him knew was there. And he didn't have the handlers that a president does. But I believe that we have a president with so much hubris that he's very much like Icarus or like Charlie Sheen in some regard. And And why do I say that? The question is, why do I say such a dramatic thing as that? Well, let's look at what he has done in the post-election landscape since almost 100 of the Democrat socialists were thrown out of office or retired. I predicted in trickle-up poverty that there would be trickle-up poverty. Was I wrong? Well, I'll ask you. Gas prices, are they up or down? Well, they're up. Is the cost of living up or down? Why, it's up. Was Tup right? Is poverty seeping up into the middle class? Of course it is. The election has been over for 5 months now. America voted against Obama. They voted nearly 100 conservatives into office in the House of Representatives. A political sea change occurred in America. And why did the nation shift to the center-right? Because of Obama's naked Marxism. But what has Obama done? Has he heard the American people? No. Despite what the voters said in November, Obama continues to act as if he's still the beloved king. He continues to push his radical socialist agenda by refusing to enforce the Defense of Marriage Act. Look what he's boasting about now on the campaign trail. The man has already started campaigning. And look what he's boasting about. Take a look at what he's boasting about. He gave 1,000 waivers for Obamacare. According to Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, there was $102 billion in hidden costs in Obamacare that was hidden. And what is he doing, Obama? He's holding one party after another at the White House while the Middle East burns. And what is his Secretary of State doing, Hillary Clinton? She continues to trot around the globe writing checks to third world nations as if it's 1952 and we've just won World War II. The American voters are fed up. The world is falling apart. The economy is still in free fall. The nation is being shackled by one socialist program after another. Came out this afternoon on the Drudge Report from CNBC. We are a welfare nation. One-third of all of our wages are government handouts. Did you know that? Listen to what I just said. Government payouts, including Social Security, Medicare, and unemployment insurance, make up more than a third of total wages and salaries of the United States population, a record figure. One-third of all total wages and salaries are made up of Social Security, Medicare, and unemployment insurance. What was it back in 1960? 10%. What was it back in the year 2000? 21%. What is it now under the socialist President Obama? 35% of wages and salaries this year are coming from social welfare benefits. And who's paying for it? You're paying for it. How does this end? I don't know. We try to end it by putting in fiscal conservatives. And what did we get? We got Obama. We got Pelosi. We got Reid spending like there's no tomorrow. And so, as I say, we have the Republicans on the other side. And the Republicans, who would be in an ideal position to benefit from this meltdown, are in fact setting themselves up to lose in 2012 by putting forward the same hackneyed choices they did the last time around. None of the choices thus far can beat Obama. In order for the Republicans to take advantage of the sea change in the American electorate, they must see some change in their weak-kneed approach. This is the Savage Nation. Those are some of the ideas I want to talk about in the Savage Nation, and I have no question for you. We're also going to focus today on a real journalist. I finally found there are some out there, by the way. But James O'Keefe of Acorn fame, is a real journalist on the order of what the Pulitzer Prize should be awarded for. Instead of this left-wing pap that continually gets reinforced by the Pulitzer Committee and by the vermin who run the journalism schools, all left-wing fanatics, we have real journalists out there, like James O'Keefe, who went with a hidden camera and found what NPR really is all about. NPR sneering at the Tea Party, calling them racist. NPR sneering at white people. NPR sneering at Jews in Israel. And my friends, we're going to play some of those tapes for you today, and you're not going to believe it. In fact, before we take our first break, I'd like to play one little piece of the... Do we have a small little segment of what NPR heard? Mr. Ron Schiller of NPR had to say. Do we have any of old Mr. Schiller? If we do, play little Mr. Schiller now on the Savage Nation.
So we have set aside, I believe, something like $5 million for, we're hardly out of concern for the defunding process that the Republicans are trying to engage in.
A stretch limo was provided as transportation to the NPR senior executives by the Muslim Brotherhood front group. While they further explained their connection to the Muslim Brotherhood, Ron Schiller proceeded to talk about why NPR would be better off in the long run without federal funding. He talked about the Tea Partiers, Christians, Zionists, uneducated Americans, and even Juan Williams.
asked about our organization. Mm-hmm. And we contribute to a number of Muslim
All right,
schools.
Well, we'll get back to this in a minute. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
No, I'm smoking a cigarette and drinking something I won't reveal. Unless they pay me.
Okay, what can I do for you? Anything?
You can get home and, like, you know, give me a big hug and avoid some eye contact.
Yeah. How does a person get here? I watch a thing like this and you wonder, how does a man wind up in this state of mind where he doesn't understand what he looks like to the world? You have to go back to the father. Martin Sheen. Remember Apocalypse Now? You remember the famous scene in Apocalypse Now where his father, Marty Sheen, played a Vietnam veteran, not a veteran, a soldier, who goes crazy in a hotel room? And after it, they wrote that they were all stoned at the time when they made that scene. He had a heart attack from the stress of performing, whatever, but he was stoned, I think, on LSD or mescaline, I forget which, when he did that. And now we have the son, almost in the end line of the father, in a way. You know, you can make statements, but there's nothing to joke about here. It's because they don't have anybody around them telling them, you look crazy. Stop it. Don't you see what you look like? And what I'm getting at is the megalomania here is the issue. These are all left-wing fanatics, by the way, who have been raised under the guise of the Benjamin Spock School of Child Rearing, which is, you can do no wrong, don't listen to anybody, you're great, my son, screw anybody who criticizes you, we're good, we're good, we're good, we're great, we're great. You're not a Neanderthal right-winger. You tell him, you do it, you be who you are, go ahead, my son. This is what you get when you have the end line of this, is what you get in Charlie Sheen. Listen to the father, Marty Sheen, at a war protest a number of years ago.
It is deeply gratifying to see so many young people here demonstrating and speaking out in public against this wretched war. And while it may not seem like your voice is being listened to or that peace is a lost cause, I just want to assure you that your voice is the only voice worth listening to, and lost causes are the only causes worth fighting for.
That's the father, Martin Sheen. Now, if he's telling this to a crowd, that means he brainwashed his son to believe that he was supreme in his thoughts and only his thoughts were supreme and worth listening to. So you say, well, didn't it come out of nowhere? No, it didn't come out of nowhere. It came from a father. And the fact is, we don't know when this is going to end. And the reason I compared him to somebody in talk radio and Lenny Bruce is because Lenny Bruce famously was a great comedian at the end because of drugs. You know what happened to him. Now, Charlie Sheen, we see the end line here, I think. And as far as the character on the Blackboard Man, we wish him the greatest success. But people have been predicting this for a long while. If you get a comment on any of this, I don't know what you can possibly say other than NPR should be defunded. Now you say, what does this have to do with NPR? Again, it's hubris. Again, they're caught on camera. They think that they're God Almighty. They're caught on camera at NPR by the activists who catch them saying things such as the Tea Party is a fanatic movement, that the movement is white middle America gun-toting and they're seriously racist people. This is now the head of NPR's fundraising thing. Then he says liberals today might be more educated, fair, and balanced than conservatives. This is an example, again, of the closed world that these left-wingers live in. They go and they talk to each other. They never hear anybody else. So when they talk about global warming, they say things to each other that you will hear coming out of Obama's mouth, such as all reputable scientists now concur that global warming is caused by man. Now, this is in the midst of the harshest winter we've seen in decades. But you understand what this is, don't you? This is now a religion. This is not science. These people are fundamentally in their own religion, and their religion is one of complete and total ignorance. They are the flat earthers, and they're calling anybody with evidence to the contrary the flat earthers. But they want you to pay for their insanity. And so a little later on the show, we're going to have the filmmaker, or shall I say the journalist, because he really is a fine journalist, O'Keefe, on the show, the man who actually caught NPR with their pants down, and actually opened a window up to NPR's reality. And I agree 100% that they don't need our money. that they should be defunded. They got plenty of money from Obama and psychopathic liberals who continue to fund them and to feed the beast of insanity and NPR. And I would say that they don't need the money. There's no reason to give them the money. We're going broke. We are broke. It's time to cut off all funding for NPR. And I know you agree with me, and that's all there is to it. Am I jealous of them? No, I'm not jealous of them. I have a better show than anybody on NPR. I make more money than anybody on NPR. So what am I jealous of? I just think it's a disgrace that we should fund NPR for any reason. Okay? Here's another story. Jewish student sues UC Berkeley for not protecting her. This young student brought a federal civil rights lawsuit against the University of California at Berkeley, saying the university did not protect her from being attacked because she is Jewish. Why? She alleges university violated her civil rights by not stopping an attack on her by pro-Palestinian students during apartheid week. By the way, I pray she wins $10 billion and puts Berkeley off the map. Even though I'm a graduate of the university has become a left-wing slush fund. This is the Savage Nation. If you'd like to make a call, you know the number. Chicago Tom, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, I believe that Obama has a tremendous amount of rage, and it goes back to the days when he was a child being mentored by Frank Marshall Davis.
Yeah, well, I covered all of that, as you well know, in a whole chapter. But, you know, there's something interesting about Obama, and it's a little, let us say, difficult to discuss, but he discusses it in his book, so I feel it's fair. You know he's of mixed heritage, is that correct?
Yes.
He says that he was never really identified, didn't really identify with his black side until he went, I think, to Columbia. And then he said he decided to identify purely and 100% as a black radical because he said that's where the cool people were. Do you remember that in his biography?
Yes.
Yes. In other words, Obama is a throwback in many ways. He's an intellectual throwback to the 60s. While most black radicals have grown up and moved on and are part of American society in one way or another, Obama has taken the 60s mentality on in whole cloth. He has wrapped himself in the 60s rhetoric of Stokely Carmichael.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. As you well know, Americans have given up on journalism in the United States of America, primarily because it's all left-wing biased muckraking. There's virtually no investigation of anybody on the left by the American media. And now we have appearing on the show is a man who I think is a real journalist on the order of Pulitzer, better than Pulitzer. And it's James O'Keefe. He's only 26 years old. He is president of Project Veritas, a nonprofit dedicated to training video muckrakers nationwide. Now, who is he? You know him from his 2009 Acorn investigation, where he and Hannah Giles produced the blockbuster undercover investigation into Acorn that revealed systemic corruption in multiple offices nationwide, documenting Acorn's facilitation of child prostitution, human trafficking, and tax evasion. Today, he has something new. He is now showing us the real face of NPR. And he joins us on the Savage Nation. James, truly an honor to have you on the show, and I rarely ever say that.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be with you.
James, you did a great job with NPR. I don't have a bias against them. I just don't like their attitude. I don't like their left-wing orientation. And mostly, I just don't like their sneering at everybody in the world other than themselves. Can I ask you something? We have this from YouTube, and it's up on my website. How did you get that work? Can you tell us where the camera was?
Yeah, well, most of the time we actually put the camera on our person, like in a pin or a tie or a hat. This time it was in a bag. It was in like a little briefcase type little bag, pointed at him. I believe sitting on the table right next to the table that the two reporters were sitting at.
And you got people to pretend they were members of a fake Muslim organization. You even had them set up a website. You rented a limo for them to arrive at the hotel with. And you offered these NPR people $5 million, which they didn't accept, by the way, did they?
Well, first of all, the organization wasn't just a Muslim. It was that we said we were from the Muslim Brotherhood, funded by the Muslim Brotherhood. And this is, we're doing a rollout sort of similar to the Acorn videos, where we're releasing this first video, but there's more NPR tapes.
Mm-hmm.
We're holding on releasing because NPR is putting their foot in their mouth right now and just lying about a couple things. So, you know, not only are we going to test the, you know, how they react to the Muslim Brotherhood, we're also going to test their honesty about what actually happened after this meeting.
Now, this guy Ron Schiller has left NPR and he's gone to some Aspen Institute or whatever. They say it has nothing to do with your tape. I don't believe a word of that. But Schiller says that the Tea Party is filled with racists and it's xenophobic. He said they're sort of white middle America gun-toting and they're scary. And he's trying to pander to these alleged Muslim Brotherhood people who are offering money. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. He said all those things.
Now, and Schiller of NPR says many Jewish organizations are not fair. And Betsy Lilly talks about Japanese Americans in camps in World War II. I don't know what she's talking about with regard to Muslims. I don't know what one has to do with the other. The questions that I want to raise for you are very simple. How much did this project cost you to make? I'd like to get into dollars and cents. What was your budget for an incredible job like this?
To be completely honest with you, we don't have a lot of money, and we have to scrape. The two guys in this video were volunteers. I had to scrape together my money. I mean, we literally are a nonprofit with very little donations. I put this investigation on my credit card. It cost us a couple thousand dollars to do this investigation, a few thousand dollars. You know, the flights, these guys are from Sean Adelaide, who played the role of one of the Muslims, is from Louisiana, and the other guy, Simon, is from Houston. So I had to fly them to D.C. I gave them my expertise. I gave them some of my equipment. And my mission is to, you know, because I can't do it anymore. People know my face and name. So I'm trying to train other people to be undercover reporters. So I flew them up there and gave them as much information as I could to get them to do this.
But they did some amazing acting. I mean, they were very convincing when you watch the video tape of them. They really do fill the parts very, very well. But you went so far as to even rent a limo, a stretch limo, to impress the NPR fundraisers, James?
They took the limo back. They didn't take the limo to the restaurant because they were late and they had took a cab, but they took the limo.
So in other words, when your fake Muslim Brotherhood donors left the restaurant with the NPR, they had a stretch limo waiting for them?
That's correct. There was a limo outside the restaurant. They got in the limo and left. And, you know, we wanted to give the impression that we wanted to be believable. So we took them to Cafe Milano, which is a very pricey restaurant in D.C., and proceeded to tell them we have millions of dollars to donate. We emphasized that we're connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, that we get funded by the Muslim Brotherhood, and we talked about Jewish control of the media, and Ron Schiller even made a comment about, well, the Jews don't really, you know, they're not really a problem here, but they definitely own newspapers, or, you know, so it was very...
Yeah, Schiller said the Jews are not a problem with NPR, but they control the newspapers. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. And, of course, his friend there... Betsy Lilly was not too far behind, was she, in her little smiling and agreeing and all of that wonderful stuff. Betsy Lilly says she likes the idea of National Palestinian Radio, and they all had a laugh on that, didn't they? She said that they used to call NPR National Palestine Radio. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, she said she got a kick out of that. She liked that. And Schiller was, I mean, we talked about being sided with Hamas and Hezbollah. I don't know how much more ridiculous you could possibly be, but...
You mean your actors said that they're aligned with Hamas and Hezbollah, and they were nodding and saying that's okay?
We said that we were tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. We said we wanted Hamas and Hezbollah coverage. And he was just saying, nodding and agreeing, and nothing seemed...
Yeah, he was enjoying himself. He had a very nice meal, Mr. Schiller of NPR. Has anyone in Congress picked up on your tapes, James? Are they running with this?
Yeah, the Daily Caller is reporting that Eric Cantor has made a statement saying that we should take funding away. There's a Republican congressman in Colorado. I can't remember his name, but he's talking about the Colorado congressman is saying that this guy is just so out of touch with people, and the elitism and the condescending nature of his attitude is...
This is who NPR is. You know that they sneer at everybody. They think they're better than everybody. They're living in their own bubble. They're like Charlie Sheen at NPR. I want to do something now for you. You have a nonprofit, so let's start with the basics. You need money. James, how do people send a donation to your organization?
Well, we just started this nonprofit. I haven't received, from the IRS. I'm kind of an enemy of the state, so I don't know if they're going to approve the tax deduction nature.
Doesn't matter. How do we make donations?
You go to, it's the website is The Project Veritas, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, Latin for truth, theprojectveritas.com, and you can, contribute there.
Well, I suggest anyone listening to this show who really wants to help true investigative journalism, you go to James O'Keefe's website, theprojectveritas.com, and this is the man who blew the lid off Acorn. Now he's doing it on NPR. You know, James, I don't know you. You don't know me. I do think you're in the great tradition of great journalists. You're like an Emil Zola in terms of trying to get at the truth. To me, I don't really care where the truth ends, whether it's left or right. The fact is, the corruption on the left is so rampant right now, and that is because the entire media will not look at them. They will rarely, if ever, look at corruption on the left side. Isn't that true?
That's something that, frankly, people ask me what motivates me to do all these things, and I am motivated by the media not doing their job, and I feel as though if the media was doing their job, people would be educated and they'd make the right decisions. And I feel as though I'm passionate about informing people about things that they don't know about, and that's what drives me, and that's why I want to continue to train people to go out there and do this.
Who are you associated with? Were you associated with Breitbart for a while? Are you still associated?
Yeah, we're friends, and he offers me strategic advice, and I publish on his site time to time. I had a contract with him for the Acorn story, so he published those tapes exclusively, and now I'm trying to build an organization, fundraise, so that I can start a movement of video muckrakers across the country.
Well, we certainly need you. Remember what Van Jones did in attacking police? I remember him in San Francisco. They wouldn't let the police do their job. They sent a bunch of left-wing goons out with cameras, and every time the police arrested a real criminal, they would film the police at angles to make it look like they were committing some kind of crime against an innocent individual. I think we need thousands of people working under you, frankly, and if I had millions of dollars to spare, I'd give it to you, James. What I'd like to do, though, is speak with you at another time via email about making a major contribution to the ProjectVeritas.com myself. I don't want to do it on the air because it would be self-serving for people to say, oh, that's great, he gave the money. But I'm going to do something through my Savage Legal Fund very soon, James, and I hope we can stay in touch. I'm going to turn this over to my audience for a quick minute or two. Is there anyone out there who wants to speak with James O'Keefe? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. What topic would you like to see James O'Keefe cover? Well, let's put it another way. If you were a producer and you were advising Mr. O'Keefe, who blew the lid off Acorn, as I said, and now has shown us the underbelly of NPR, who would you have him go after? By the way, Mr. O'Keefe, who inspired you to become such an investigative journalist?
That's an interesting question. I was in college, and everyone thought the same way, and I was fired from my daily newspaper for criticizing some professors of mine, and I started taking cameras into offices and confronting professors. This is not something that I'm comfortable with. I'm sort of outside of my skin to do this type of work, but I feel like it needs to be done. I'm passionate about injustice, misinformation. In college, I started confronting professors and putting it on, this is even before YouTube existed, 2004, putting it on a website and, showing the professors behaving inappropriately. So that's sort of what got me started.
Mm-hmm. But is there an individual in the world of journalism that you admired? Any historic journalist? Any journalist in America who you said, wow, that person's brave, I want to be like him?
I have to say that, frankly, in contemporary journalism, no one's really doing this type of reporting.
That's how I see it. In fact, I try to search for investigative journalism of the last 50 years, and all of it is left-wing propaganda. You go back to Woodward and Bernstein, always left-wing. Everything they've ever done is left-wing. You go back to the My Lai Massacre, so-called, again, to try to smear the military. Virtually every piece of video or reportage that is allegedly investigative journalism that the mainstream media supports is very, very far to the left. Rarely, if ever, is it from the conservative perspective. You're really in a class by yourself. Now, we got loads of callers right now. I don't think anybody expected this but me. And when we come back, we'll speak with James O'Keefe here on the Savage Nation. Again, if you care to make a donation, theprojectveritas.com will take your donation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The current Republican Party, particularly the Tea Party, is fanatically involved in people's personal lives and very fundamental and Christian, and I wouldn't even call it Christian. It's this weird evangelical kind of move.
So here's the NPR snot-nose Schiller calling the Tea Party fanatical, fundamentalist, and the Tea Party xenophobic, white middle America gun-toting. It's astounding, not because I heard this for the first time, but because we actually heard it coming from the mouth of a person at NPR. This is how they talk. This is how university people talk. They're terrified of people who vote. They're terrified of anybody who owns a gun. They're terrified of anybody except third world gangsters, frankly, who they worship. James O'Keefe broke the lid on Acorn and the corruption therein. James O'Keefe ripped the face off NPR. He joins us now again on the Savage Nation. Again, his project, theprojectveritas.com, V-E-R-I-T-A-S.com. In fact, James, if I could give you some marketing advice, just call your group truth.com. Make it easy for people because most people can't remember all that. But anyway, he's president of the Project Veritas, a nonprofit dedicated to training video muckrakers nationwide, and we need him, boy. So I've asked people in the Savage Nation of this large audience, this dedicated audience, to call the Savage Nation, and who do you think he should target next, okay? Let's begin in, well, any of the callers are good, as frankly, as others. Texas Todd, go ahead, fire away.
Yes, sir. Hey, I'm wondering, James, if you have any plans to go after the ACLU. It seems like they're a communist organization that's trying to...
They are. Oh, would I love to see you get inside the ACLU. Is that impossible? Are they tighter than the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, nothing would surprise me. You know, I oftentimes intend to shock these people, and they oftentimes shock me back. So that is an organization that has been suggested actually by a lot of people. So something.
Do you know
else.
Who the largest single donor of the ACLU is, James?
No, I don't.
They gave $9 million after they sold their banks. I'll give you their names off the air. I know personally that they owned a savings and loan series of banks here in California. They sold it just before the economic crash. They made their money on mortgages. Okay, let's put it to you that way. Before the mortgages turned out to be based on fairy dust, they sold their banks for billions of dollars. They're fanatic left wingers. They're the single biggest donors to the ACLU. I will give you their names. You ought to go outside their houses because they live here in the Bay Area. I can give you a lead on that if you'd like.
That would be great. I'd appreciate
it. Yeah, that would be a good one. Ask them how they feel now when they wake up and find out who the ACLU is and what side they're on. But there's plenty of targets for the O'Keefe group. Again, I want to go back to the bigger picture, James. You know, we never met. I've seen your work. We don't have any journalists like you. We have fakers like Bob Woodward and Bernstein, who continue to get off on their 1960s Watergate nonsense as though that was the be-all and the end-all and the zenith of journalism. There's nobody like you in the media anymore. I don't know how you function. You're functioning on a shoestring. And as I say, I'm going to help you guys. In the minute you get off the air later on, email me. Beowulf will give you my email. We'll start to talk, but I definitely want to do what I can. I can guarantee you from this show, you're going to see donations start to flow in, okay? And then I'll do what I can to help you through the Savage Legal Fund. This is one of the things I wanted to do anyway, after I solve my case with the UK. I'd like to send you to England. I don't think you'd have any luck penetrating the Cameron government to find out what they think about that one. Let's take another caller. Hawaii, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Who should James target next?
Yeah, hey, James, I would love to see you, great work, by the way, I would love to see you go after this university, Oregon State University, where they're trying to kick out this this scientist up in Oregon ran against a liberal up there, Pete DeFazio, and his three kids are all in the nuclear PhD program at OSU. And now OSU, which is a liberal bastion up in Oregon, they're trying to kick all three of Dr. Art Robinson's kids out of the PhD program.
Have you seen that story, James? It's on WorldNet Daily today. Have you seen that story? There's a professor up there who had the temerity to run against the left-wing fanatic in the last election and lose, and now they're targeting his three children who are PhD candidates and throwing them out of school. Did you see that story, James?
I did, and I'll have to look at that, too.
It's shocking to believe that it's this vicious. This is something you would see in a communist nation, and it's going right up there. It's happening right under our noses at Oregon State University. I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. Where is this? Report says too many whites and men leading the military. I don't know where they put the story, but it's a shocking story, and it's from WorldNet Daily, and it's up on my website. I don't know where they buried it. I have no idea why they buried it. It's a great story, but they're trying to take three PhD candidates whose father is a nuclear scientist himself, and they're discontinuing them and throwing them out of the university because he wants to run against Fazio again. Can you believe this story?
It sounds pretty outrageous. Unfortunately, in Oregon, some states are, you can't do some of the film work because you have to get people's permission. Oregon is one of those states, but...
You need to get their permission, I see. Well, they sure have themselves locked up, don't they? Anyway, the group is theprojectveritas.com. James O'Keefe pulled the mask off of Acorn. He has now pulled the mask off NPR. When will the next tape be released, James? We have 15 seconds.
I would say... I have to think about, in this investigation, probably in the next few days.
James O'Keefe of the Project Veritas, thanks for being with us, and God bless you for the work you're doing.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We've just had James O'Keefe on from the Project Veritas, but I want to go to my website right now. Report says too many whites and men are leading the military. The U.S. military is too white and too male at the top, and it needs to change recruiting and promotion policies and lift its ban on women in combat, the report says. So let me see if I understand this. If we had more women and more minorities, we'd have a better military? Why don't they just volunteer to join? I mean, it's an all-volunteer military, isn't it? So who's writing this kind of crappy report? On the right of my website, Michael Savage is celebrating his 69th birthday on March 31st. I need your support to continue my fight for freedom. Please read the... Okay, I'm not going to become Lenny Bruce here or read my legal problems on the air. Just read it, okay? And many of you who are donors to my fund are going to be receiving an email today or tomorrow about this campaign that I'm involved in. NPR executive says the Tea Party is scary and racist. White House official praises the Muslim Brotherhood leader. You're not going to believe this story, again from WorldNet Daily, who does a great work. While visiting a mosque in the Washington area, a senior White House security official, I don't know where they get these dunces from. Where did Obama find one moron after another? This dunce goes to a mosque and praises a Muslim cleric for his great work, who happens to be a top leader of the Muslim Brotherhood. Where did Obama find this schmuck? How does he find these people? And what's the schmuck's name? Deputy NSC Chief. And what is his name? Dennis McDonough. Goes to a mosque and he prays with a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, and he praises this man. One FBI veteran regarding the White House says they are so ignorant, this is unbelievable. Nobody can believe this is going on. And this is all going on as Republican Representative Peter King is going to have hearings this week on the radicalization of Muslims in America. Already he's being attacked by Al Sharpton and the usual rent-a-mobs. Now, I have a question. What have they got to hide? Why are they so afraid about Muslim radicalization and hearings about that? What are they afraid of? That's what I'd like to know. What is it that they've got to hide? If I were a Muslim in America, I'd be more terrified of the radicals than the average Christian or Jew should be, because they're actually more targeted by the radicals than are Christians and Jews, in case you don't know it. I would welcome these hearings if I were a moderate Muslim, but I don't hear any moderate Muslims except for one praising these hearings. And there is one Muslim, by the way, who is praising these hearings, but he's been buried in all of the lies being put out by Al Sharpton and the usual goon squad of leftists. What does Al Sharpton have to do all of a sudden with the Muslim problem? Why is he on the wrong side of this issue, I'd like to know? Answer, because Al Sharpton's on the wrong side of every issue, as I've noticed in his illustrious career of the last 40 years, whether it was egging on fire throwers at Freddie's Fashion Mart, or egging on Shawana Brawley and her false accusations against Detective Pagonis, if you remember that one. And so we're going to see these hearings this Thursday from Peter King, and I'm 100% behind them. They're long overdue, and I wish Peter King the best. I only wish that they give the entire committee hearing national coverage as they look into the radicalization of Muslims in the United States of America. Long overdue, thank God. But the big story here is that a senior White House security official appointed by Barack Hussein Obama praised a Muslim cleric who happens to be a top leader of the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, it gets worse if you go down the list. Representative King got a security upgrade as Muslim hearings begin. Muslims fear congressional hearings. My question is why? Why are they calling them bigots and racists for holding these hearings? Why are they comparing it to the McCarthy era? What is this all about? They're saying stop using your anger that we have a black president to attack Muslims. Now, what kind of sign is that? What do blacks have to do with Muslims? Why are they linking blacks with Muslims? Why are they trying to imply that all blacks are sympathetic to radical Islam? The whole thing is crazy. I can't wait to see these hearings on Thursday. Obamacare vital signs starting to fade. Bachman to decide by early summer on presidential bid. Wisconsin's Walker dismisses Dem overture. UK electricity CEO get used to not having any electricity. Did you hear that one? The biggest shocker coming out of England is this. Some girl who runs the health service over there said that any baby who's born before 23 weeks should be terminated and aborted automatically. They shouldn't be kept alive. Millions of dead anchovies float to surface at Redondo Beach. The picture is amazing. Enough anchovies to top much of the world's pizza and Caesar salads have floated lifelessly to the surface of Redondo Beach. I got to tell you something. As a lifetime conservationist, I don't have the answer to this. Why are these fish dying? Why are the anchovies dying? What's caused this? Could it be all of the medical waste that's being dumped into the water from all of the cities? All of the untreated medical wastes coming out of our hospitals? I don't know what's doing it. Do you? You can't blame global warming, because there's no evidence that the oceans have warmed in that area. So these are some of the topics if you want to talk about them. Or the really big story is about the economy, the economy, the economy. Drudge picked it up earlier. And he found from CNBC that 35% of all income in the United States, or actually all jobs, 35% of them, are given to people on either welfare or Social Security. How is this possible? How could one-third of all wages be handouts in the United States of America? Las Vegas, Ben, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I've been on the Census Bureau site, and this is absolutely appalling. This one-third, I can't put a number yet on what one-third looks like, but I'm looking at the aggregate total of federal and state employees only. We're looking at $1.3 trillion is the payroll for federal and state and local authorities.
Oh, my God.
And that's just...
No, we understand we become a welfare state. Most federal jobs, a good percentage, I don't know what percent, are worthless. Useless jobs, they're make-work, they're patronage positions, they don't do anything but create burdens for we the taxpayer. But when it came out today that in 1960 only 10% of wages were social welfare benefits, and then in the year 2000 Social welfare benefits made up only 21%, and now under Obama, they make up a whopping 35% of wages and salaries. How can we afford this?
Saying that basically one-third of the nation is supplying all the cash for the other two-thirds? Is that
possible? No. One-third of all wages in America, one-third, 35% of wages and salaries this year, go to payouts from the government, including Social Security, Medicare, and unemployment insurance. They make up a third of total wages and salaries of the United States. Now, where does that money come from is the issue. It comes from the taxpayers. That's what you're saying. But it's deceptive because it doesn't mean that two-thirds of the workers are supporting one-third. It doesn't mean that at all. It's more like the top 2% of earners pay more taxes than the other 90% of taxpayers. Did you know that?
Of course.
And yet, the top 2% of earners who pay 90% of all the taxes in America are being attacked by the vermin on the left as though we're not paying enough. And I got to tell you, I worked all of my life to get into this category. I was once poor. I was once a teacher. I was once a welfare worker. Why do you want to attack the people who are paying your salaries is beyond me.
Well, they're waging holy war on us, that's for sure.
Well, it's called class warfare, something Hillary and Bill Clinton engaged in every day of their lives when they were in the presidency. You know that. And in many ways, that's all the left wing ever does. Thanks for the call. New York, WOR, Donna, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. Not only is there a scandal of NPR's propaganda machine at taxpayers' expense, but it's the outrageously high salaries of their employees that we're paying for. I mean, salaries...
What are the salaries of NPR? Do you have them handy?
In front of me. The then-president NPR, Kevin Close, made $465,000. The morning edition host, Renee Montag, or whatever, $332,000.
What do these government hacks make in radio, for example? What kind of money do they pay these government hacks who don't have to work for a living? They have no advertisers. They don't have to satisfy advertisers. They just get up there and bloviate about left-wing causes. How much do they make in radio?
They're huge numbers. Managing editor Barbara Raim, $383,000. It's time
Wow.
that the market, they have to earn their money.
If they open that position up to market value, how many out-of-work, excellent talk show people would apply for that job for $75,000 to $100,000 a year? Maybe 100? Who could qualify at least 100?
Michael, we can't afford these salaries if they don't deserve it. I'm an artist.
No, I agree, but what are the Republicans doing about it? The check pants Republicans are acting just as I predicted they would, only a few of them are actually doing the job they were given the mandate to do. The rest of them are just like John Boehner, who I've called a pink tie. He turns my stomach, frankly. John Boehner is the biggest disgrace in the history of the Republican Party. He's Bob Dole. He's Bob Dole all over again. There he is with the pink tie, crying every other day, going along and getting along. That's exactly what we don't need in the Republican Party. We need attack dogs. We don't need lap dogs.
I totally agree with you, and thank you for all you do.
Well, I don't know. I do what I have to do here because I can't believe the state of the country. We have a couple of other great callers. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. You care to talk about these or any other topics right here on the Savage Nation. Ago, American servicemen, or was it last week, were assassinated by a Muslim. President says nothing about Islam. Do you know that the Fort Hood massacre, which is the second deadliest terrorist attack on American soil, do you know that the Muslim major Nidal Hassan has not yet gone to trial? Ask yourself why the government under Barack Hussein Obama and the army under whoever it is who runs the army has not brought Major Nidal Hassan to trial. Ask yourself why, while Hassan is enjoying the comforts of a prison hospital, some of our bravest ex-soldiers are rotting in Fort Leavenworth for having done their job and killing the terrorists over there. It's an upside-down world, and I've done everything I can, despite my own problems. I've done what I can to help some of these guys, but I'm asking you to understand what's going on. We have hearings coming up Thursday from Representative King, who should be lauded for having the guts to stand up to the Muslim pressure groups like CARE. And instead of the government saying, you know, we need to see what's going on in this community, because while it's true that not all terrorists are Muslim, it seems that Most of the terrorist attacks in this country over the last number of years have been conducted by Muslims who hate this country and want to impose Sharia law. Common sense would dictate that the first place you look is inside the Muslim community. You don't look inside nunneries. That's common sense. But we have a lack of common sense, a lack of courage at the highest levels. Here, for example, is Deputy National Security Advisor Dennis McDonough. We have no idea where Obama dug him up from. Speaking to Muslims at the Adams Center in Sterling, Virginia on March 7, 2011. Listen to 26.
We're exposing the lie that America and Islam are somehow in conflict. That is why President Obama has stated time and again that the United States is not and never will be at war with Islam.
Right. Then why is it that so many Muslims are at war with America, Mr. McDonough? Listen to the next two.
For a long time, many in the United States thought that our unique melting pot meant that we were immune from this threat. This despite the history of violent extremists of all kinds in the United States.
All kinds. Again, hold it. You hear the double talk? Again. Again, the big lie. The minute they say terrorists of all kinds. They bring up Timothy McVeigh. Listen to the next, 28.
We must resolve that in our determination to protect the nation, we will not stigmatize or demonize entire communities because of the actions of a few. In the United States of America, we don't practice guilt by association. And let's remember that just as violence and extremism are not unique to any one faith, the responsibility to oppose ignorance and violence
rests. Get him off my show. How can we win a war when the enemy has declared us the enemy and we have our leaders who are saying we're not the enemy of anybody and nobody is our enemy? So everybody now is suspect, which is why your grandmother's being goosed by the TSA agents and why anybody of Muslim extraction is basically ushered right through for fear that they might attack their sensibility. I'm sick of this garbage. Beowulf, I want you to look up McDonough's background before he was handpicked by Obama to become a so-called Deputy National Security Advisor. Where did Dennis or Denise McDonough come from with this kind of patsy-like attitude? I cannot believe what I'm listening to. It's astounding to listen to this. And ladies and gentlemen, we are at war. Many young men are dying for this country's freedoms. They're dying in Afghanistan, whether or not you believe in the war. They're over there, and they're taking bullets because we have radicals over there who happen to be of the Muslim faith, who are killing Muslims in Afghanistan and would like to kill an awful lot of other people in Europe and the United States of America by their own admission, not because of what I am saying. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Richard in Sacramento, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, first I've got a suggestion for Representative King, and then second I want to cover your ban in the U.K. For Representative King, he needs to look at the mosques that are practicing Sharia finance. Because if they are doing that, they're in violation of their tax-exempt credit. Second, I want to say about your ban in the U.K., you bingo. So you're in good company.
Well, thank you very much for that. That was a great help to me. I really appreciate that. On another topic, Carrie in Sacramento, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Michael Savage, thank you very much for your participation in the American community, and I really appreciate everything you do. Just wanted to give you a little lowdown on the Redondo Beach Canyon down there. Actually, it's sardines that are floating in the harbor, and was only pushed up by the La Nina, so you can expect rooster fish in Sacramento.
But why are those millions of these sardines dying?
Well, what it is they were chased up by predatory fish like albacore. And
you mean that friendly little tuna fish in a can is actually a predator? Don't tell that to all the tuna eaters.
Oh, no. The albacore, it's a heavy predator. It'll eat your...
And I thought it was a nice, liberal fish because they're so friendly in those cans. They actually jump right in the can for everyone to have a tuna sandwich, don't they?
You know, and you're going to get the rooster fish. They come up. They came up out of the canyon, and they went 2 feet deep into the harbor because it comes out of the 6,000-foot canyon.
Oh, so you're saying they come out of the deep waters and they chase the sardines up?
Yes, sir.
But the whole area is going to have a fetid aroma, aren't they, unless they scoop them out of there, correct?
You know, the liberals over there, they're gonna want to take their little crab sardine fetishes and crab.
Why don't they try to save the sardines, bring them home and shelter them in their cribs?
Savage.
Like all of you and like me, millions of Americans find community, comfort, and support in their faith. That includes President Obama, drawing as he does on his Christian faith. So today reminds us that being religious is never un-American. Here at Adams Center, with one of the largest mosques in America, you see the incredible racial and ethnic diversity of Islam. For me, being here is not unlike being at St. Mike's back home in Minnesota, or for that matter, going to any house of worship or community of worship anywhere in America.
Now here is Dennis McDonough, who Obama picked out of nowhere to be National Security Advisor. The man has no military training, no police training, no background whatsoever in intelligence, and now he's Deputy National Security Advisor going around to mosques. And basically, I have never heard anything like this. Now, who is this McDonough? He has this background, typically Georgetown. That I wouldn't say is a plus. I would call it a minus, but not necessarily a big negative. Here it comes, though. McDonough served as a senior foreign policy advisor to Senator Tom Daschle. After Daschle's reelection defeat in 2004, McDonough became legislative director for newly elected Senator Ken Salazar. Does that name ring a bell? And here's the kicker now. McDonough later served as a senior fellow, whatever that means, at the Center for American Progress, a communist think tank, in my estimation. Now he's picked by Obama, all of a sudden without any military background, without any police background, without any background whatsoever in national security. He is now made Deputy National Security Advisor, and he's sent to speak to Muslims at the Adams Center, where he smears Christians and Jews and Buddhists and Hindus and says that we have to fight extremism amongst all religions. It's not limited to any one religion. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. We have a government that is completely disconnected not only from the people but from reality itself. But we also have a media that's disconnected from reality. Today I was watching Fox News as I was eating lunch, as I often do, flipping around from CNN to Fox to MSNBC to see what they're talking about. And I saw a new bottom, a new low from Shepard Smith, who was already a laughing stock in the media. There I see Shepard Smith speaking with two guests, and they're laughing about the murders in Tucson and the Tucson shooter, Jared Lofton. They're having a good old time laughing. Listen to this in clip six.
Would it be possible to camera two zoom and put them in double boxes? Would it be possible? I know that's sort of on the fly, something to be joking about, but I'm just saying. Oh my goodness! Well, it's not a moment to have fun with. He's a bad guy, obviously, but I'm now a little more afraid of you.
That's Shep Smith, the lowest of the low on Fox News, laughing about the Tucson shooter, Jared Lofner. And the worst of that was the defense attorney who was laughing throughout the entire case, saying how he would handle defending the Tucson shooter, Jared Lofner, the games he would play to make certain that he doesn't get the death penalty. Let's go to the callers. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, New York, WOR. Linda, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
In response to your comment several minutes ago about there not being any commercial advertising on public television or public radio, there are huge underwriting contracts which serve not only as advertising by major corporations, but they also, as per the practice in advertising, they more or less guarantee that the subject matter discussed will not do anything to harm the reputation of those corporations.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I was making a reference to the kind of advertisers you hear on commercial radio that they sneer at. Yes, when it's underwritten by various foundations, it's to make sure that their companies are sort of not the target of investigative reporting, I would suspect.
For example, Chubb, Charles Schwab, Johnson & Johnson, Merrill Lynch, PSE&G, Chevron Texaco, Frito-Lay, Shell, Massachusetts Mutual, Monsanto, Pepsi, Mutual of Omaha, Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, Bayer Pharmaceuticals, Medtronic, MasterCard.
All wonderful American companies, aren't they, though, Linda? And they all seem to think NPR is a wonderful organization.
Well, but it's advertising, and we're paying for it because the companies are getting tax breaks. They're getting to write this off, and the content is being limited, even though it's advertised as in
yes,
the public.
Yes, you do. You make a very, very good point. Looking at the stories of the day, Linda, you sound like a person who's kind of very involved with the news. What would you say to you are the three top stories out there that struck you today as worthy of discussion?
whether or not there will be, and this is being discussed in Europe but not here, whether there's going to be some sort of limited nuclear attack on Libya. Horror.
What?
Horrors.
I didn't even read that. You mean who's going to do the limited nuclear attack on Libya? The EU?
Plus, probably the United States. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but...
You know what's interesting? Libyan tanks are reportedly bombarding and killing women and children. When an Israeli fires a rubber bullet, it makes it to the UN. How come we haven't seen the outrage from the vermin on the left about what he's doing to his own citizens?
Well, you're not going to see much of it in the United States press. Read the foreign press. Read the London Independent. The Manchester Guardian...
Yeah, but the American press is obsessed with Israelis who might slap a Palestinian terrorist around after they capture him, after he blew up a bus and killed people. How come they have nothing to say about him? How come they're avoiding this?
Well, I used to...
We know the... I mean, the question answers the question. Do you think the Charlie Sheen story is worth your attention?
I don't think any of it is worth my attention. Charlie Sheen is somewhat more amusing.
Yes, but why are we somewhat obsessed with Charlie Sheen? Why do you think that is?
That started in the 1950s, the promotion of a celebrity culture, and largely by the Defense Department, believe it or not, to engage the minds of people in what's called family romance, voyeurism, etc. And if you read a book, a great book written by C. Wright Mills called, the Something Elite in the United States, The Power Elite, I think it was called.
Oh, I remember that book when I was a youngster. That's interesting.
Again. It's
You're saying that the Defense Department came up with this celebrity worship to distract us?
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing. I never read that, Linda.
Well, from our own lives, because I'm sure a lot of people are more interested in Charlie Sheen than their own family members tonight, which is pretty sad.
Linda, are you a professional? Were you a professional? In what area? Can you tell us?
I'm a food delivery enhancement facilitator, which means waitress.
Oh, come on.
Sure am.
But you have such a cultivated, cultured attitude and approach. How are you so knowledgeable? According to NPR, you're just a waitress, one of the unwashed masses. You don't know anything because you don't work for a government agency.
Well, by the way, when you stated the credentials of Mr. McDonough, it was amusing to me because we've gone from Moscow to mosques. We formerly had Condoleezza Rice as the national deputy secretary, whatever, of NSA.
Yeah, she was national security advisor, right?
So we've got someone who was an academic who had no police experience, no intelligence experience, nothing. Now we've got another one. So when are we going to start hiring people like me with no college degree, who probably know more about what the monsters and angels of the world are up to?
I mean, absolutely. You would do a better job than Sandy Berger did as a national security advisor for Bill Clinton. I think as a waitress, you wouldn't have to tuck secret files into your socks, would you?
Well, Mike, I wouldn't trust any of these people in government right now to be my busboy, okay?
Well, you know, you've got a very sharp mind. Are you a news addict?
No.
Wait a minute. But you call this radio show, The Savage Nation. You're right on the money with all of your comments. You know what's going on. Where are you getting your information from?
From my own mind, from having done an awful lot of reading on from different points of view. I like to be able to state the opposition's point of view.
Okay, so let's start from the top then. How often do you listen to talk radio?
Every day.
All day long, from the morning till the night?
Yeah, mostly from the right wing. I'm on the left, but I'm interested in how the right wing is covering issues.
Well, that's interesting. So you're from the left side because you're a worker who works for, you know, wages that are, you're struggling. So you see the world from that point of view. And yet you agree with me on a deputy national security advisor ought to have some military experience or some real-life street experience?
Not necessarily agreeing with you, but there's no difference in the credentials between Mr. McDonough and Ms. Rice.
Okay, I understand what you're saying now. Nor are they any different from Sandy Berger, who was basically a lawyer lobbyist. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right, so in other words, they seem to appoint political appointees to these positions in security, and they have no security experience. The head of the CIA, Leon Panetta, had no experience in intelligence work. How do you feel about that?
I think they're all window dressing.
For who?
for general consumption, but across a wide array of the population.
If you were president right now, what would you do to straighten America's economy out as a waitress?
What would I do?
Would you fire any government workers? Would you cut their pensions? Would you rein in the spending? Would you stop the spending that Obama's engaged in, or would you spend more?
I don't think it can be handled or stated by one person. I think that what needs to happen is there need to be massive discussions, fireside chats, every night in this country.
Well, we're having one right now. I'm giving you a chance to talk to an awful lot of people. Would you simply raise taxes on the workers, the people who make the most money, saying they're the problem, or would you cut back on some of the wages and pensions?
No, I would eliminate the tax break for the wealthy, that part of it which is not dedicated to employing people in the United States. I would have a tax incentive for businesses to stay in the United States. I would put a lot more money into funding higher education for people. But the biggest disappointment...
Wait. Why would you put more money into education? What are we getting for all of that money?
It's the kind of education we're doling out, which is largely run by textbook companies, bureaucrats, and people who believe that the state of the nation is basically okay if you can make enough money. I believe that what needs to happen...
But what kind of education would you fund?
An education where it was 100 years ago, we could teach children with a piece of chalk and a blackboard.
On Fox News. You've got that on Fox News. They have a piece of chalk and a blackboard. They're not doing much teaching.
Why do we need $50 textbooks funded by mobile, Exxon Mobil? It's all a racket to make
money. What
is
it that you would see the money going for? We overpay our professors. They're living like kings, most of them, in the colleges. They teach 4 hours a week and they make $100,000, $150,000 a year. Why do we need more money for higher education?
A lot of that is to cover health insurance costs in the universities. A lot of the tuition and...
No. They make that kind of money plus free health care. No, you don't know how the universities work and how well paid they really are. They're living very high on the hog, as most public workers are. You, as a waitress, I'm surprised you don't have any resentment towards the public sector workers. They're making more money than you are. They have better benefits than you do, and they don't work hardly anywhere near as hard as you do.
But they're not as happy as I am.
But why are you happy?
Because I've never lusted after material objects, televisions. I haven't had a television for 11 years. I never missed it.
How do you live without a television? I wouldn't know what to do without movies at night.
You'd figure out. Well, you can still do movies. You can have a little portable television and play movies.
Well, anyway, I really appreciate your listening to the show, Linda, particularly as someone who's coming from the other side. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Score one for the good guys. National pop propaganda radio cans Ronald Schiller, as he was caught on tape by our guest, saying things that are typical of the liberal mentality. They claim that it's not. Listen to what NPR said today. It said, "We completely disavow the views expressed by Schiller. They say NPR is fair and open-minded about the people we cover. Our reporting reflects those values every single day in the civility of our programming, the range of opinions we reflect, and the diversity of stories we tell." That is the biggest lie I've ever heard NPR make to date. They don't have a range of opinions. They don't have a diversity of stories. They're all far to the left, and they do not deserve taxpayer funding whatsoever. Let them get it from the Obama KGB front groups. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. So there's score one for the good guys. Schiller was seen for what is, in my mind, what typifies the universities today and the public sector today, particularly NPR. When I say public sector, I mean public sector media, obviously. They're anti-Israel. They're mildly anti-Semitic. They're anti-conservative, for sure. They're anti-white. They're in love with the third world. Etc. Everything that is bad with America is exemplified by NPR. There's no reason for NPR. Let him, you know, function in the real marketplace as I do. I live and die by my audience, by the way. If my ratings were to disappear, I would disappear from radio. Don't think anybody supports this show simply because I'm such a nice guy. If you were to go away from this show, if you were to stop listening to this show and other shows like this, we wouldn't be in business. And the reason we exist in this competitive marketplace of 80 stations in every market, most major cities have 70, 80 radio stations. How do I stand out? How do I even get a two share or a three share? That means 3% of the listenership is listening to this show. That's a phenomenally large number when you consider the competition and the number of advertisers that we have to have in order to fund the show. But why? Why do I exist? If you were able to get my point of view and the stories I pick explained the way I explain them somewhere else, you wouldn't be here. But you can't get them anywhere else the way I do it. So that's why you're listening to the show. That's all. Hartford, Connecticut, Cameron, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Well, not only that, Doc, but when you talk about Fireside Chat, you have brought the Fireside Chat to a new level. This interview with Linda, the food delivery enhancement specialist, is a high water mark in talk radio.
Why is that? I liked it very much, but why did you enjoy that?
Oh, that was superlative. I'm blown away. I'm sitting outside the house waiting to go in and talk to the Queen, who prohibits me from listening to your show. But I just had to call. heard the interview with Linda. This is incredible radio. Linda.
Tell me what was so incredible about me and talking to Linda, the waitress.
Don't call her a waitress, Doc. Call her a food delivery enhancer.
I don't see anything wrong with being a waitress. It's hard to be a good waitress.
No, but you got to give her the benefit of calling herself what the label she gives herself.
All right, she's a wait person. I get it.
Yeah, but, I mean, then you bring in the universities. Now, look at what happened, as reported, in the Northwestern.
Why doesn't your wife let you listen to the Savage Nation in the house? She's a diehard left-winger?
Well, boy, you're the best. You know, you ask the right questions. Here's a woman who just finished the book that you sent me called Trickle Up Poverty, and now she's a fan of yours. But do you think she permits me to talk to you during the supper hour? And right now it's...
Oh, so in other words, it's 8 o'clock in Connecticut right now, and she wants to serve dinner?
That's right. She is the greatest person that ever walked the earth.
Has nothing to do with the politics, is that it interrupts your dinner.
Well, that's correct. And she has...
You know what I made for dinner last night after the radio show? I was so fed up with restaurants. I went home and I cooked a chicken cacciatore for the first time in my life, a brand new recipe. It was so good. All it means is Hunter's chicken. It's basically chicken and vegetables, but I did an Italian recipe that was so good it was unbelievable. I had three staff members over to my house for dinner. Would you believe it? We had a wonderful time. And I think I'm going to try a new recipe tonight. Chicken cacciatore a la Savage. It's very, very interesting. No, it's a great recipe. I'm so tired of the supermarket chickens. Normally I have my assistant go to Safeway or somewhere and bring home a chicken because I don't want to go to and cook and whatever. They're so emaciated. They're like bruised, diseased chickens that they barbecue, aren't they? The lowest of the low they put in the barbecue. I said, just get me one of the hippie chickens that was raised with a degree and it has organic food. And I got to tell you, it tasted good. It tasted like a chicken again. But that's neither here nor there. That's what I made last night. I drank some white wine. Left me a little bit of a hangover, to be honest with you. I got to tell you. I don't do well with wine during allergy season. It provokes all of the... tonight it's going to be a brewski. That's so I don't react to beer. And probably I won't cook. It's already too late in the day. I didn't give anybody any instructions for bringing food over. It'll be a takeout with me and Teddy watching the news tonight, seeing what a schmuck Shepard Smith makes of himself again on the replay.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The big story today is that NPR was caught on a hidden tape bashing the Tea Party movement, saying that it consists mainly of seriously racist people, and that is the fundraising executive Ron Schiller of NPR. And, of course, there's much more. You'll not believe it. On this tape, this hidden camera tape, the NPR executive is caught trashing conservatives and sliming Jews in Israel. Immediately, NPR came out and said they're appalled by its executive's Tea Party remarks and video. NPR is now distancing itself from remarks made by a fundraising executive who said the American Tea Party movement is comprised of white, middle American gun-toting and seriously racist people. The comments were made by Ron Schiller, NPR's exiting vice president for raising money, and they were recorded in a sting set up by conservative journalist James O'Keefe, best known for catching Acorn in their corruption. Schiller went to lunch with two men posing as members of the Muslim Action Education Center, a fictitious organization the men claimed had ties to the Muslim Brotherhood of America. You got to watch this video, which is on the web. I have it up on michaelsavage.com, where Schiller says that NPR would be better off in the long run without federal funding, and that the Tea Party is a movement that is, quote, fanatically involved in people's lives, hijacked by fundamentalist Christian and xenophobic people, and that has been hijacked by, from the Republican Party. It's astounding. Now NPR is running away from it, saying, oh, no, that doesn't speak for us. Well, Eric Cantor, Republican Virginia, said, as we continue to identify ways to cut spending and save valuable resources, this disturbing video made clear that taxpayer dollars should no longer be appropriated to NPR. Why don't they just say it like it is? Cut them off already. Just cut it off and stop going in circles. Why should I be supporting left-wing fanatics who live like kings? I'd like to know why. They don't need my money anyway. Let them go get it from George Soros. He's got plenty of money that he made from raping currencies. Go ahead. Take it from him. There's another Schiller there, by the way. There's three Schillers. You got to see this. We're going to do this today on the Savage Nation. We're also talking about many other topics on the Savage Nation. We're comparing Charlie Sheen's meltdown to Lenny Bruce's meltdown at the end, by the way. We are talking about the Icarus Syndrome and other anomalies of the American landscape. We are talking also about the post-election landscape on the Savage Nation. What do I mean by the post-election landscape? Well, here's what I mean. In my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I predicted that there'd be trickle up poverty, right? When it came out last October, I said there'd be trickle up poverty. Well, I'll ask you, was I right or wrong? Gas prices up, cost of living up, middle class down. Was Tup right? Is poverty seeping up into the middle class? You betcha. The election's been over for 5 months. America voted against Obama and voted nearly 100 Democrat socialists out of office. A political sea change occurred. The nation has shifted back to the center because of Obama's naked Marxism. And what has Obama the meddler done? Despite what the American people said in November, he continues to act as if he's still the beloved king. He continues to push his radical social agenda by refusing to enforce the Defense of Marriage Act, by giving 1,000 waivers for Obamacare, and by holding one party after another at the White House while the Middle East burns. And his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, continues to globetrot, writing checks to third world countries as if it's 1956 and we've just been victorious in World War II. America is fed up. The world is falling apart. The economy in America is still in free fall. The nation is being shackled by one socialist program after another. The Tea Party is stronger than ever, right? And yet Obama is deaf to the cries of protest. He will not see beyond the ranks of his own Praetorian Guard, which consists primarily of his wife and his mother-in-law, according to what we have read. Came out today that one-third of all wages in America are handouts. Did you hear this? Came from CNBC. Government payouts, including Social Security, Medicare, and unemployment, make up more than a third of total wages and salaries in the United States population, a record figure that will increase in the future if action isn't taken before the majority of baby boomers enter retirement. Let me repeat that. One-third of all wages and salaries in the U.S. consist of Social Security, Medicare, and unemployment. Did you hear that? Even as the economy is slightly recovering, social welfare benefits make up 35% of wages and salaries this year, up from 21% in the year 2000 and only 10% in the year 1960. Did you hear this one? Can you believe this? So let me repeat it again. Social welfare benefits were 10% of the total economy in 1960, right? 21% in 2000, and now 35% under Obama. How can this go on? The answer, it is not going on. But we have Obama the meddler, who has never worked for a living, doing this. And at the same time, the Republicans, who would be in an ideal position to benefit from this, they're setting themselves up, I think, to lose the election by putting forward the same hackneyed choices for the presidency they did the last time around. Romney, Huckabee, Palin, and Pawlenty. Believe me, none of them will beat Obama. In order for the Republicans to take some advantage of the sea change in the American electorate, they must see some change in who they elect in the primaries. Now, what's on my website, michaelsavage.com? Well, on the top left, Michael Savage is celebrating his 69th birthday. Read all about it on the candle, the picture with the candle. Report says there are too many whites and men leading the military. How do you like that? Too many whites and men leading the military? What? Can you believe this? You mean more women and minorities would make it a more effective military? They ought to get on the ground and kiss the feet of these guys who sacrificed for the country. You left-wing bastards, you! NPR executive says the Tea Party is scary and racist. He says they're not just Islamophobic, but they're really xenophobic. He says, I mean basically they believe in sort of white middle America gun-toting. I mean it's scary, said Mr. Schiller. Good riddance to you. Representative King holding hearings on Muslim activism in America, Muslim American radicalism, is getting a security upgrade because of the practitioners of the religion of peace. They say that there's no need for the hearings. I think that their very protests indicate there is a need for the hearings. On the bottom of Michael Savage, gang rape of 11-year-old rocks a Texas town. A billboard is credited in the capture of the East Coast rapist suspect. In England, merry old England, a leading British National Health Service official, you know what that means, don't you, says babies born at 23 weeks should be left to die. That's the New England. From the land of the Magna Carta to the land of the death of the newborn. I guess it's cheaper that way. There's more money for social services. Obama is shrugging a terror, says Michael Walsh. Number of health care law waivers climbs above 1,000. You got the money, you can buy your way out. We're living in a banana republic. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We have a president in a state of Islamic denial, according to the Washington Times. We have a secretary of state in love with Al Jazeera and no arguments. Wherever you turn, you have incompetence and academic leftists ruining virtually everything they touch. I can give you one case after another, but I don't think I have the desire to do so, nor do you really need to hear it. Did you hear about the anti-gun efforts on the border and how our ATF inadvertently gave machine guns to drug cartels in Mexico, and how Eric Holder is refusing to release the documents on this case to Republican Senator Grassley? Did you hear any of this? No. What do you need to hear it for? You got your own troubles. I understand. This is the job of the newspapers, and frankly, one is doing their job, and that's, well, Fox is doing their job. Fox News website's terrific. But you have to read it. You have to have the time and the inclination to read it. Justice Department was in charge, as you know, of the ATF. And thousands of guns were sent to the drug cartels by our own government on the assumption that they would be able to trace the guns and find out who was getting them. The U.S. government allowed assault rifles to be sold to suspected straw purchasers for an illegal trafficking ring. And what happened was the agents didn't track the weapons after that. Now, who blew the lid off on this story? An agent from the ATF who said he can't hold it in anymore. He believes that it's because of his own agency. Agent Terry was killed with an assault weapon because he was forced to use a beanbag gun by Obama and Holder as opposed to a machine gun. In a separate case not connected to this agent's death, authorities are saying that a weapon purchased in October in the Dallas-Fort Worth area was used in a Feb 15th attack on two U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents as they drove on a highway near San Luis Potosi in Mexico, killing Yami Zapata and wounding Victor Avila. The man who bought the gun, his brother and a neighbor were part of a suspected gun trafficking ring, but the point was they bought the guns from the U.S. government through a straw man. And how now we have an ATF agent coming forward and saying he can't live with himself anymore. He can't live with himself because he was screaming to the agency not to do this. He was saying, don't do this to the jerks who run the ATF, the college boys and girls, the frat boys and the sorority girls who Obama put in charge of everything. And our great attorney general, Eric Holder, who apparently answers only students' questions, doesn't answer questions that the media ask him. All right, what do you want to talk about? You can eat your heart out over all of this if you wanted to. The big shocker is Hillary Clinton going on, going before a foreign policy priority committee meeting and being recorded by C-SPAN, where she calls Al Jazeera real news and bashes American news because there's too much argument. Listen to clip two.
Viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, you know, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which, you know, is not particularly informative to us, let alone foreigners.
No, what's informative to you is what you say. That's informative. Or what anyone in government says, you don't want any arguments between talking heads because that's a dialectic that doesn't belong in a democracy. Well, I mean in an autocracy. Well, I mean in a Hillary Clinton world. You don't want any arguments and you don't want any commercials because that's, well, tawdry. It's not PBS. PBS has no commercials, just propaganda 24/7, which is one giant commercial for the left wing. You say PBS, NPR is not commercial, not driven by commercials. It's driven by one commercial. Left-wing fanaticism 24/7. That's all. Did you hear how much money they make at NPR? Do you see the salaries, what these wonderful public servants make? We're here. The Mint says execs of PBS and NPR make more dollars than Obama. You know how much money they make? Let's look it up for you. Here we go. Let's look at All right. President and CEO Patricia Day Stacy Harrison. Anyone with a hyphenated last name I don't trust. Anyone who has more than one last name, I don't trust. Let's start with that. But anyway, she's an executive at the CPR, Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And the president and CEO, Patricia D. Stacy Harrison, received $298,000 in reportable compensation and another $70,000 in other compensation from the organization. Now, that's nothing compared to Kevin Close, president emeritus of NPR, who received more than $1.2 million in compensation, according to tax forms that the nonprofit filed in 2009. $1.2 million in compensation. That's the man who's the president emeritus of NPR. And if you think that's bad, it's worse. There's lots of money that comes from you, by the way. How bad is it? In 2001, the federal government appropriated $340 million for CPB. Last year, it got $420 million. And as Congress is looking how to close the $1.6 trillion deficit, cutting funding for this corporation has even been proposed by President Obama's Bipartisan Deficit Reduction Commission. But Obama wants to increase their budget because he loves the fact that they are slavish worshipers of his Leninism. And Sesame Street, by the way, I never let my children watch. Whenever it came on, I turned the TV off and took them out in the street. I never let them watch that propaganda, incidentally. Last year, the Open Society Foundation, backed by liberal fascist, in my opinion, George Soros, gave NPR $1.8 million to help support the latter's plan to hire an additional 100 communist reporters. When NPR receives million-dollar gifts from Soros, it's an insult to taxpayers. You hear this? So that's what's going on in the country. We have meddling in the news. We have meddling on every level by individuals who are not elected by the people. And if public broadcasting can pay its presidents $500,000 to $1 million salaries, while its children's programs are making hundreds of millions in sales, and liberal fanatics are willing to write millions of dollars in checks to help these organizations, there's no reason we, the taxpayers, need to subsidize them anymore. Let them compete in the marketplace. Let them do what I do, which is work for a living. Okay, 1-800-449-8255. How do you feel about Hillary Clinton praising Al Jazeera and calling it real news? How do you feel about Hillary Clinton saying that arguments between talking heads is a distraction from the real news. How do you feel about Hillary Clinton glorifying Al Jazeera? We're going to go to a caller. Max in Chicago heard me. Thanks, Max. What'd you hear me say?
Hey, Michael. Yes, thanks a lot. I can't believe Hillary. I mean, being from Chicago, I'm so disgusted that she's from Chicago. I mean, oh, my mm-hmm. God. I'm just
right.
I'm totally disgusted with that.
Well, she's always been sort of in a world that doesn't relate to the United States of America as an entity. But that's not what you called about, Max, is it?
No. I called about your one-line thing about religion. I love that, Michael.
Yeah, let me repeat it. I've heard it said that, put religion aside, the one golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In other words, you wouldn't put a bomb in your neighbor's house because you wouldn't want your neighbor to put a bomb in your house, correct?
Right.
Et cetera. You wouldn't rob from your neighbor because you wouldn't want your neighbor to rob from you. It makes common sense to do that way. 99% of the world's people are like that, incidentally.
Yep.
But I found this following quote from a mystical Jew, someone who studied the Kabbalah, and he said, in every act that you're about to perform, whether it's eating food or brushing your teeth or in any manner of things that you could be doing, before you do it, ask yourself one question. In this act, are you moving closer to God or moving away from God, farther away from God? Because it's as simple as that. And that's an amazing way to look at the world.
Savage.
You know, there's no question that the use of specific words or phrases are important in politics today. Joining us now to talk about it is Frank Luntz, who has written several books on the use of language. His latest book is entitled Win: The Key Principles to Take Your Business Back from Ordinary to Extraordinary. Frank Luntz, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
It's a pleasure to be back, and it's been too long.
So what's in your latest book?
I've written several books on language, but this is the one that puts it all together. It provides readers with the specific words and phrases to do everything from win a debate with your liberal or conservative friends to get a raise in your place of work by knowing what to say to your boss, to have the ability, if you ever wanted to run for office, to understand how to communicate. The choice of words that we make determines how people hear it. And I'll give you a couple examples. You call it an estate tax, and people think you're rich. You call it a death tax, and they don't understand why you would tax someone for dying. You talk about vouchers for education, and it sounds like a government program. You talk about scholarships, or more specifically, opportunity scholarships, and it's much more pro-child. Drilling for oil is an ugly, creates an ugly visual. Exploring for energy is high-tech, new-tech, clean, and safe. And so this book, Win, has recommendations for political conversations, recommendations for conversations in the workplace, and just recommendations for what to say and how to say it that's based on the most successful people in sports and entertainment and business and politics. It's an examination, genuinely, of words that work.
Well, we hear words like imagine used all the time. Why does this work?
I'll pick out a few to you that I really enjoy, and imagine is the most powerful. And actually, one of the things that the book does, that Win does, is it tells you what words not to use. Imagine works everywhere because it allows the listener to engage in the conversation from his or her own perspective. If I asked you, imagine life at perfection, what you would think of, how you would respond to it is different than how I would, different than how 300 million Americans would. Imagine is visual, inspirational, aspirational, and it's so individualistic that if I'm talking and I'm debating on politics, I always invoke that word because I know that I am guaranteed to connect with and find a way to bring the person who I'm arguing with over to my side. When I ask them to imagine something, I'm already halfway to winning it. No excuses is the ultimate in accountability. And when you say to your boss, I'm going to get it done, no excuses. Or I made a mistake, no excuses. You are accepting accountability. You're building your reputation. You're creating a sense of trust, which none of them really exist in this very anxious environment that we have right now. And it's what we want to hear from our elected officials, what we want to hear from our CEOs, and what we should be saying ourselves. And here's another one that's similar to that. If you remember only one thing, that phrase, if you remember only one thing, guarantees that whether the conversation is 30 seconds or 30 minutes, the listener is going to remember the very next thing you say. See, so many of these words in WIN are about setting the context to have the most effective debate possible. And quite frankly, libertarians, conservatives, independents, they focus on what they say rather than what people hear. WIN is devoted to giving you the language that allows you to be successful because it's the language of America, and it's the language that works.
How important were these ideas in the last presidential election, Frank?
It was very important. Barack Obama is a very good communicator, and hope and change were the words of 2008. Based on the research that I've done, the words of 2012, I'll give you an example. The best way to conclude a statement or a company meeting or a political rally are the following four words: let's get to work. When you say to people, let's get to work, that's the call to action. And I am hoping that you will hear that in 2012 among those who are trying to change the people who are in power and trying to find a way to send a message that Barack Obama is all talk, let's get to work, let's actually get it done, is what the American people really want.
What about phrases such as "you decide" and "believe in better"?
"You decide" is not meant as an homage to Fox News. It's meant as an homage to those who believe in the power of the individual, who believe in the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. When I was finishing WIN and I had "You decide" there, I was afraid that people would interpret it as being pro-Fox News, when in fact what it really is being pro-freedom. If I say to you, government shouldn't decide, an HMO shouldn't decide, you decide, that's not saying watch Fox News. That's saying I believe you should be in control. I believe you should have the responsibility. You should be empowered. And that is the ultimate expression of freedom. You decide. The believe in better phrase comes from Sky in Britain. It's never been used in the States before. And it's an illustration of what we actually want in life. We're not asking for more. We're asking for better. We're not asking for quantity, we want quality. Believe in better is an aspirational call to do something, to make sure that tomorrow is better than today, that next year is better than this year, that this intergenerational improvement that we'd come to expect and demand as Americans, which has not actually happened in the last 10 or 20 years, we want it again. The politician, the businessman, the leader, who talks about believing in better and then let's get to work, that's a person we're going to follow.
Well, what role does our education system play?
Well, again, in putting together the words and the principles for WIN, I wanted to focus not just on the language, but on the attributes, what it took to be a winner in life. And the tragedy is that so many of these attributes aren't really taught in the education system. One of the key components of ultimate success is not taking no for an answer. It's actually considering no as not yet or not today. Another example is not looking at your job as work, but seeing it as a career and appreciating it and valuing it and doing it day in and day out. We have to love what we do, and the most successful people in life will tell you that they never go to work because every day to them is an adventure. A third example that's not really taught in schools is the idea of creativity, that it is perfectly acceptable to fail, and then you get back up and you do it again. That we have a sense that if you fail, you are punished. What freedom is about is the freedom to fail, and then the chance to do it over and do it better. So there are 15 specific attributes that are inherent in all winners. And WIN goes into each of them, and the tragedy, as you suggest, is that they really aren't taught in school. I don't think there's enough of a focus on results, which is another one of the powerful words. that we tend to reward people for effort if they try hard, rather than focusing on the results, whether they're actually successful.
Oh, I agree.
And that in a system that rewards effort, it does not necessarily measure the success, and it does not necessarily encourage people to do better. And to me, it's a tragedy that they measure how many days you go to school, but they don't really measure what you learn in school. That to them, attendance is as important as really understanding and be able to explain and appreciate the culture and legacy and tenets of this country. And that the last chapter of WIN is about principles, because in the end, language is meaningless unless it promotes solid, moral, decent principles. Some of the most powerful people in the 20th century were the most evil. And some of the best communicators used their ability of language to do so much damage. That last chapter about principles, and it focuses on Enron and the language that they used, and also focuses on the positive. And I'll use Mike Milken as an example, West Coast. He now lives in L.A. Here's a guy who spent some months in prison. And he is single-handedly in the process of curing cancer, at least prostate cancer, making men much more aware of it. That's an example of someone who has applied principles to effective language and is generating an incredibly positive result that is going to have an impact, a fantastic impact on millions of Americans. There's nothing political about it. There's no business-oriented aspect of it. But it is applying effective language to a tremendous challenge and making a real difference.
Where can we read more?
The great thing about WIN is that it is sold so fast in so many places that almost any bookstore has it. If they want to get it immediately because they've got a job review, or if they want to win a debate tomorrow, go to barnesandnoble.com. They can get it to you in 24 hours. But what I urge them to do is not just to buy WIN, but to actually read it and to underline it. Because as I wrote it, it changed my life. I realized where my failings were as I was writing this book and what I need to change. And I also realized, even though I'm supposed to be a wordsmith, the language that I was getting wrong. And if it teaches me, who lives this for 20 years now, I think it'll teach every listener that WIN really will help you win.
Frank Luntz, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
I have to tell you, it's an honor. It's a privilege. And I promise you, those aren't just words that work. It really is so. So thank you for having me.
I'll be right back. Savage. Play some Motown for me. I don't think I'm getting anywhere with the audience today. I got a feeling they're not putty in my hand today. All the postman is good for is looking at you with those high polluting trucks. I get my mail at 5:30 every day. Every time I hear a stink coming up the street, I smell it before the truck arrives. The most high polluting trucks in America are postal trucks. Talk about carbon, a carbon footprint. You ever notice how they stink, those old postal trucks? I don't know anyone who uses the U.S. mail for anything. Does anyone use the U.S. mail for anything? Everyone I know who has anything important to send either uses FedEx, UPS, or email, right? Or texting. What's with the U.S. mail? It's just for circulars. I'm sorry, welfare check. Sorry. I realize why the U.S. Postal Service operates. Welfare checks. Retirement checks for government grifters. This was a good song in its day. But play it louder. I like the Motown sound. It's a different time in my life. Had a nice little move to it. It was almost like Pat Boone. It's like post-Pat Boone-ish. How do you become a right-winger? How does that work? Pat Boone's dance party. How does that work that he's a right-winger now? You know, I got to think this through for a minute, because you know how many years I've joked about liberal women who were once so gorgeous that your breath was like you lost your breath when they appeared on the screen? Like, particularly from a certain angle, it's like, oh. And then as time and gravity catches up with them and their derrieres start to, you know, follow the laws of nature and collapse. Like, I forget a few of their names. They all become left-wing fanatics. Have you noticed that? Who was the one I'm thinking of? Not Twiggy, whatever. There was one, Goldie Hawn. She was once so physically beautiful that men lost their appetite when she walked in a restaurant, okay? Then as she got older, you know, things happen to our bodies. Nothing against her. And I said there's a quotient. The lower the derriere, the higher the liberal quotient. As the LD goes down, the LQ goes up. Remember I was joking about that? Well, now let's look at the other side of the aisle. I noticed something else. On the other side of the aisle, is you got a lot of Zelig runs it, allowed to go there. Only Hollywood right-wingers go there. They're like Murano conservatives, okay? They're all conservative all of a sudden behind the scenes. So, but I notice that most of them have bad careers. There's almost nobody in Hollywood who actually has a viable career who's a right-winger. Have you noticed that? So the worse their career, right, the higher their conservative quotient, the HQ goes up, the conservative, the CQ goes up. You can put the two in. I don't have the time to work it out, boys and girls. Now let's take some more callers on the Savage Nation. Harrisburg, PA. Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Savage, for taking my call. I just want to tell you, I just want to give you your props, your intelligence, and your keen punctuality and keen intelligence, because what you said 3 days ago, other hosts are just repeating it. It's like they listen to your show and do their shows. That's all I have to say, Dr. Savage. Keep up the good work.
Well, I know that the smart... Listen, I know people listen. I know they listen, and I know they compare. It's like any other product out there, and the fact is talk radio is a product I'm providing to you. And if the product didn't taste good, or if it was a few days old, you wouldn't be buying it anymore. Interesting story, an Iceman. They found an Iceman, a well-preserved 5,300-year-old mummy, sometimes lovingly called Frozen Frit. And he was recreated by Dutch forensic experts. And, you know, what's shocking is it looks like me after a bad night on the town. I swear to God. Artists recreate the face of Otzi, a 5,300-year-old Iceman mummy. This could explain my aversion to heat and to the tropics. Did you see that picture yet on my website? They say Ozzy was, yeah, according to Discovery News, Otzi was about 5'3" tall. I'm taller than that. But that was a long time ago. He weighed 110 pounds, not bad, but they didn't have, you know, pasta in those days. A new model of him will go on display beginning March 1st to January 15th in the South Tyrol Museum of Archaeology in Bolzano, Italy. The body of the Iceman was discovered in 1991 by accident by German tourists and made headlines around the world. At first, he was thought to have died recently. Since then, the ancient mummy has undergone a slew of examination for which scientists have gleaned bismuth. Last steps are arranging from his last meal to the cause of his death. He probably ate in the Chinese restaurant that I ate in. The ancestors of the Chinese restaurant I ate in. The dim sum they fed me the other day would have knocked the mummy out. Would have knocked out an Iceman 5,300 years ago. What are they putting in that stuff these days? The quality of food, particularly the mixed food that you disguise with sauces, has gone so downhill it's frightening. Wherever I go, I'm talking about food for a minute. I slipped into it. I'm afraid now of restaurants where it's mumbo-jumbo food, which I've enjoyed for years, because the sauce is mainly China. You really want to eat shrimp from China? Do you really want to eat calamari from the fresh, clean waters off the coast of the South China Sea? How would you like? I mean, have you been reading what they're doing in China? That, what was it? The rice is contaminated coming out of China because the water they're using, the wetlands they use to grow rice, are polluted with industrial runoff. You know, I noticed at my local Japanese restaurant, which I've eaten in for years, the guy makes a nice meal, a cheap, quick, but I can't eat the rice. It smells. It has a weird smell, but he doesn't speak very good English, and they sold it to a new immigrant. He doesn't speak any English. So if I went in and nicely said, "What's going on with your rice? It smells bad," he wouldn't understand me. So I have no way to even ask. Now, look, I could send the rice to a laboratory and see what lead, cadmium, mercury is in it, but I'm not going to bother. In my old days, if I didn't have a radio show, I would have been a real troublemaker. I would have sent the rice to, like, the state laboratory. I would have come back in 12 years. Probably with the same obscure results as my spittle, came back from the genealogy laboratory. Like, there's a high probability, what is that? We've done the studies in the state laboratory. We've discovered that we don't know anything, but if you look carefully enough, we cannot prove definitively one way or the other whether or not there is any increased risk of any heavy metals. On the other hand, we should not forewarn you that if you do eat it, there's no probability that you might not, in some cases, even from dyspepsia all the way up, and therefore, thank you very much, send in your money so we can go on vacation and get our pensions. That would be what I get out of the state laboratory. So you can't use it. You have to use an independent laboratory. It costs me $5,000 to find out what's in the rice. Do you understand that? I don't want to do it. The state should be looking into the rice that smells. I should be able to call up the state of California and ask them, okay, Japanese restaurant I'm eating and the rice stinks since the new owners took over. I think it's contaminated with cadmium because it's being grown in China. We have some of the best rice in the world here in Northern California. Do we sell it in California? The Sikhs went into the rice business here 100 years ago. They grow beautiful organic rice in Northern California. This is Michael Savage broadcasting to 400 or so radio stations, 380, 375, 400, who can count?
Savage.